The following program is intended as an educational program, not as investment advice or as a recommendation to buy, sell, or participate in any investment vehicle, product, offering, or strategy. Investment advisory services are offered through Turning Point Financial, a registered investment advisor. Any references to specific securities, investment vehicles, or strategies are intended only as examples, not as recommendations. All investments involve risk, including the possibility of losing money. Welcome to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720, where every week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. Do you ever wonder how your money and the things you own are actually helping you live out what you feel called to in your heart? There's so much peace of mind that you can sense when your money is aligned with your values and convictions, as well as your financial goals. And there's really, really peace of mind that comes when deep down you know that your financial goals are in sync with your values and convictions. There's potential for anxiety and worry and all that goes along with that when you sense that your money is not in alignment with your values and convictions.
That's right, James, but that's easier said than done. There's so much financial information coming at us every minute of every day. It can actually be overwhelming. Terminology, ideas and philosophies, various competing principles, and of course, financial products and services. Keeping all of this information straight can be downright confusing and possibly even scary.
Yeah, and when you're confused, you simply aren't making good decisions.
I don't.
And that can keep you from being all that God wants you to be, and it can hurt you pretty badly as well. Well, welcome to episode
43. I think, Joe, is that where we're at?
Or 41.
Hero and Money Emission?
No, it's 42.
42.
Neither.
We're getting ahead of ourselves.
Split the difference. That's right. Not 41, not 43. It is episode 42. I just lost my train of thought. Anyway, I'm James Good.
And I am Eric Terrio.
It's good to be with you this week.
That's right. And each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles.
That's right. Part of the way through the show, we'll get to our weekly puzzler. And a weekly puzzler is a brain teaser. It's a puzzle. And we'll share it with you. We don't know if the puzzle is actually interesting to anyone but us, but here we are. So it'll be there. If we remember.
Guess what? It is 41.
It is 41. Okay, episode 41. All right, there will be a quiz on that the next time around.
Listen to 42 as well next week.
That's right. That's right.
Well, let's jump into our show. Our first segment, we'd like to get into our week in review. James, what did you think was a financial news highlight throughout this past week?
Well, Germany had an election.
Okay.
And I'm not a scholar on international politics, but this was apparently a big deal. The Christian Democratic Union won at the polls in Germany, which kind of moved from
the Christian Democratic Union.
Yeah. So from a political standpoint, my understanding is that the whole Germany economy the whole country kind of moved a little more conservative.
Okay.
Why is that important? Well, Germany economically is the third largest exporter of stuff in the world.
Make some good cars.
They do make some good cars.
Yeah.
When I think about large economies exporting lots of stuff, like typically Germany doesn't just pop into my head.
Hmm. Yeah, not large stuff. Fine things, right? Like good old German engineering. You hear that phrase.
Good old German engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like this stuff. But it's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. So, For it to be third.
Right. That's right. Germany is apparently 4.5% of the world's economy.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty significant.
Yeah, for sure.
But they apparently specialize in technologically advanced products. We'll get to the cars in a minute.
Oh, leave me in suspense.
Yeah, that's right. But Germany's largest trading partner, of course, is the European Union, which makes sense because there's Germany plopped right in the middle of
as the leading
of Europe
country there.
That's right.
As well.
That's right. But Germany apparently exports a great deal of stuff to the United States.
I'm sure.
So, names we all recognize, right? Mercedes.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good one.
Right.
BMW.
I didn't even think about that. That wasn't in my notes. But
Porsche.
Porsche, yeah.
Volkswagen.
Audi,
yeah.
That, you know, speaking of Volkswagens, I had a VW Bug when I was a kid.
My dad had two.
That's
in high school.
Yeah. Me and my brother, we both had VW Bugs. And we used to take them apart and put them back together again.
Yeah.
And just jokingly, I told people one time that it was when I was a kid, I learned that if you took apart two VW Bugs and you put them back together again, you'd have enough parts to make three VW Bugs, and they would all run just fine. Right?
You're not working on my car.
You're not working on my car. But, you know, but it...
Well, they became famous. They were very simple to work on.
Very simple.
And I'd say the response to the gas crisis at that mm-hmm. in that era.
That's right.
So that emerged as a very popular choice.
That's right. And so there it was, just great, you know, German production. Now, I mean, Japanese cars, too. We you know, my father-in-law drove around in a Honda for many years.
Well, they seemed to master, like, the assembly line process and quality control.
Mm-hmm.
So not, you know, kind of a little different animal, not so much refinement, but they've really ironed out a lot of their kinks and their manufacturing process in Japan.
That's right. Yeah. But, you know, a number of years ago when we had a pet cat, and it was then that I realized, I would go around reading labels on all this stuff to see where these products were coming from. And lo and behold, our cat food was manufactured in Germany.
Oh, wow.
And I thought,
oh, you got a fancy cat, huh?
Serious,
imported cuisine,
yeah,
from Germany, you know, caviar from Russia.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But there it was, and I mean, we've talked about trade deficits before and stuff like that. But just putting arms and legs on it and making it really practical, there's a lot of money flying all over the globe.
Oh yeah,
right, and over there is Germany doing that thing. So.
And it's easier than ever just to hop online and order things from around the globe.
It really
so
is.
So even, you know, in the past, things might have been made around the world, but we were kind of confined to our bubble here and what we were able to procure.
That's right. Yeah. So just a few, of course, transportation equipment comes, you know, a lot of German transportation equipment. We talked about some of the cars, but they also, the United States imports like optical products,
mm-hmm.
medical instruments, and so on and so forth. So it's a lot of stuff that comes in from Germany each and every year. So but apparently, you know, Germany is
so trying. How does that tie in with their elections, would you say?
Well, again, the whole country moved a little more conservative and apparently, you know, the industrial production of Germany has been somewhat in decline, as a large percentage of their economy is driven by consumption, services, and so on and so forth. And so, you know, they kind of have a similar thing going on as we do here in the States, where we're trying to get some of that manufacturing back.
Mm.
And
so we'll be, I guess, how that may affect our listeners is that they're a competitor is for a landing spot.
They're a competitor for
a landing manufacturing.
Spot. That's right. Yeah. And while we don't, you know, we clearly don't make investment recommendations here
on the air.
On the air. That's right. We still remember there's a lot of economic activity going on all around the globe.
Yes.
And so, so you want to make sure that, you know, your investments are properly structured to be able to take advantage of that economic activity.
And if you don't know if they are, then give us a shout.
That's right. That's right. Don't forget to give us a call. So the Bureau of Labor and Statistics reported out January's Consumer Price Index, kind of shifting gears. January's consumer price index was up a whopping 0.5% in January.
And the consumer price index, that's essentially cost of goods for folks.
Cost of goods, that's right.
Mm-hmm. What you have to pay out of your pocket when you go to the grocery store, and you're pretty much paying for anything.
Well, it depends. Remember, there's three ways of viewing consumer price index. You can have, quote, headline consumer price index. You can have core CPI or super core CPI. And they all are basically different pieces.
What's being included in the calculation.
That's right. Yeah. So core CPI strips out, quote, the more volatile components like energy and commodities.
Well, which one do you like the best? Which one do you think's more accurate, I should say?
Well, I think super core, or no, I think headline is more accurate because it involves everything,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to taking pieces of that out just to, for whatever reason.
Because we're paying for everything.
We're paying for everything.
Right.
That's right. But January CPI up a whopping 0.5. I mean, annualized, that would be 6%. And
half a point in 1 month.
That's right. We keep hearing about how, yep, we've gotten inflation where we want it and so on and so forth. But that number
probably not any rate cuts anytime soon, I take it.
Well, but see, that's an interesting thing because all around the globe, central banks are cutting rates.
I meant from our folks.
Yeah. But if the Fed is not cutting rates, if the Fed doesn't cut rates, then the Fed is quickly out of step with like the whole rest of the world.
Mm.
So it'll be very interesting to see. It feels to me, honestly, like the Fed is between a rock and a hard place.
They were kind of out of step, too. Back in September and October, November, we were looking at those charts. We were saying
what
governments were cutting. Mm-hmm. We weren't. They were.
That's right.
It seemed like there wasn't consensus around the globe for sure.
That's right. Yeah. So the interesting thing is that if inflation is still going on, but the economy is arguably kind of stagnant. I mean, nobody likes to say the word stagflation, but it does feel like possibly we might be there. So in any case, make sure your investments are structured the right way. If you are looking for someone else to talk to, be sure to give us a shout. But for sure, go over that with your advisors and make sure you stay well allocated.
That's right. And check out our website, www.wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we'll get into the rest of our show. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And our guest today is Sarah Geiling. Sarah is the store manager over at 10,000 Villages in Mechanicsburg. Just say hi. There.
Hi, everyone.
Yeah, that's right.
Thanks for joining us, Sarah.
So everybody knows.
Thanks for having me.
I mean, it's like when you're on the radio, people can't see that you're actually here. So you have
You're real. We promise the listeners.
That's right. She is actually here with us. So, everybody's heard this term fair trade, probably, right?
And hopefully,
And it just kind of conjures up images of coffee and chocolate and happy farmers, right?
Yes.
Is that like an accurate image?
Yeah, sure. That's definitely one group of people that we are working with in fair trade.
Yeah. It's one image, right?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Are there other images that kind of go along with fair trade when people think about that?
I think for some people, you might think of fair trade clothing.
Yep. Sustainability.
Yes.
With camping gear, I'm familiar with that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So that's another.
The way they source their down from the animals.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, most products can be fair trade. I think those are probably the two. Food and clothing might be the two most common ways that people think about fair trade. But there are other ones as well.
Yeah, like what?
Like home decor and books.
Books?
Yeah.
How would books?
Just that everybody in the process is paid fairly for their work. Any
sourced.
Yes, exactly. Any kind of chain of a product being developed and produced can be fair trade as long as there is transparency and kind of accountability in that process.
Looking through each piece of that supply chain.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And just making sure that everybody's and the impact of that. I mean, this is so important because I think for our listeners, if there's only one thing that, you know, you take away from our conversation today, is that we talk about aligning our values with our action steps. And we know that when money leaves our pocket, leaves our checkbook, that it has an impact one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so this whole fair trade thing is one way that when dollars leave, they actually leave our pocket and do something that's in alignment with what we believe our values to be.
Right.
I remember.
And also, folks get to vote with their wallet, right? We talk about, stocks or mutual funds that are ethically and morally screened, biblically responsible.
Right.
And that's a way that you can vote with your dollars in that world. Mm-hmm. And in your world, Sarah, consumers are able to vote with their dollars for ethically sourced and responsible.
Right, absolutely.
That's right. I, a number of years ago, I had participated in a mission trip where we were helping to set up biosand filters in a very remote mountain village. And I actually walked up and down the mountainside with some people who were, I forget, it was like 3 miles they had to walk. Mm. It was a long way. I forget how far. It felt like
forever.
Right. I'm not used to walking up and down a mountainside in 100 degree heat, but these people are like, hey, this is what we do every day. And it took almost half the day to walk down this mountainside, fill up this 5 gallon bucket. And then they like put it on top of their heads and walked back up the mountainside. And as we got to the top, I was like, oh, okay, it's time to quit.
Were you carrying water?
No, I was not. No, I actually had to like take a break next to the trail, and they were all kind of laughing at, the Blancs, the North Americans who couldn't make it up and down the mountainside. But the point is, like, they spent half their day doing that, and as a result, like, the kids weren't in school, they weren't learning anything, and I thought it just really struck me that, possibly if the way I bought my coffee, would provide a more a better compensation along that supply chain,
right,
that maybe those kids could have been in school.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And so that's kind of the impact, really, of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are there other? So it's we've talked about, like you said, home decor and books and clothing and some food items like coffee and chocolate. Are there other pictures or sort of problems, if you will, I guess, in that space?
Well, another big product category that we have at the store is jewelry. And there may be people that when they think fair trade, they can think of fair trade jewelry as well.
So it's really not just a marketing ploy to get people to feel nice.
No, right? Absolutely not.
This
there's great stories behind all of our products about different artisans around the world, whether it be India or Bangladesh.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure each one has their own
touching
story.
Exactly. Each one works with, like in India, we work with an artisan group called Silence, and they employ deaf and physically disabled people who usually would not have access to a job, might be shunned by their society. And in this work program, they are given the opportunity to make a living. They're taught skills to help them live their lives better. So stories like that are really behind all of our products.
Yeah, yeah. And that's great. I mean, we'll unpack that in, more detail when we get to the third segment here. But again, just the awareness of knowing that as a consumer here in our country, that the way I spend my money can either, sort of have an impact down path A or path B, or maybe path C or D even.
Yeah. And what I think I've always been curious about talking with this about folks, and also even going through this in business school, is that what's fair? Right? Where's that line of what's fair and taking advantage of labor?
Mm-hmm.
Because in different countries, like, from our perspective, it might seem like, wow, that's not enough, that's not fair. Mm. But for them, like, it seems cruel to have a younger kid or an adult do something, but really that might be the best opportunity they have in their area.
Mm-hmm. Oh, true. Yeah.
So it's like, if you take those jobs away, trying to do the right thing and thinking that's cruel, really now they're going to go do something worse for less money. So like, how do you chew through that? Is there like wage indexes that you kind of, you know, go off of? What, how do you determine what's fair throughout that supply chain?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's something that our corporate office tends to deal with a little bit more. But one of the major things about fair trade is that there is transparent price agreements. So unlike traditional retail, where they're going in and they're saying, we're paying this much for this product, and that's what you get, and there's no thought behind it. Within each country, within each artisan group, somebody from 10,000 Villages is talking to them. And yeah, they're evaluating all of those things. They're evaluating, what is the cost of the goods you're buying? What is a normal wage? What is the currency? They're taking all of that into account. And then they are in partnership with the artisans. So the artisans get to have a say in what they're making as well. And that's what makes it so special right off the bat, is that the artisans are involved as well. It's not just, right, we're empowering them. It's not just us in America here going in and being like, okay, this is what we're going to give you for this.
Right.
It really
bang
is a right. It is a relationship.
That's good.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of moving parts. Right. And again, as you said, that you know the corporate office there, there's some folks that are really spending a lot of time thinking through the impact that all along the supply chain at different levels and so on and so forth. Which, I mean, we talk all the time about the importance of having a plan, right?
Oh, all the time.
A defined plan and understanding what it means, what does success in the context of that plan actually mean? So
if you don't have it written down and specific and spelled out, you'll just be spiraling around and never reach your goal.
Yeah. So, you know, here in this whole fair trade conversation, this is a beautiful example of the how success is defined by making sure that people have sustainability in their wages and their living standards, and carefully thinking out a business plan to help make that happen, right? I didn't practice that before I said it, but
I'm sure corporate is. I'm sure they have that process nailed down, and you know, a plan in place for how they calculate different regions of the world and different scales. And,
That's right, because 10,000 Villages has been in place since, do you know how long?
Our founder the first time she ever bought product and came back to America to sell it was in 1946.
1946? Okay.
Yes.
That's been a while.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Right. Long enough
so
to.
We've been 10,000 Villages has been around for a while.
Right. Yeah. Long enough to have learned some things.
Just curious, do you know what that first product was?
It was hand embroidered fabric, or I don't know if it was towels or what exactly it was, from Puerto Rico.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. She was really drawn to the hand embroidery, which is what caught her eye.
Yeah. And there's still hand embroidery
today.
To this day.
Yep.
Yeah, that's so cool. I mean, you can actually go to 10,000 Villages like year round and there's just loaded with beautiful stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
From all different cultures.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah. So fair trade, having our dollars making the right impact as consumers when we're buying things for ourselves, and making those dollars make the best use of that impact as they float around the globe. So it's what we're talking about here today.
Yeah, you have a choice, right? You can choose to have those. And even when I went to like Romania and Colombia, I would go to buy something, but I would look, like, was this made locally? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you flip it over and it's made in China. So they just shipped it in, they're just reselling it. So it's like, no, I want something a little more authentic.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we were on that mission trip that I was telling you about where we were setting up biosand filters, and we stayed in this guest house, and there were kids that would come over and, you know, try to sell us little things. I got taken for a ride, right?
Right. Got bamboozled.
Yeah, I did. No, there was like this little bracelet, and I was like, you know, $5 for a little bracelet. But, you know, I was like, so I gave him $5 for this little bracelet.
The next cart, probably $2.
Yeah. And so Anyway, it's good to have a plan, right? Because if you're not clear on that plan, then you wind up doing things that maybe are not as effective as they could be. Yeah. Well, we should take some time here for our weekly puzzle, and we're almost out of time in this segment.
Yeah, we'll probably have to get that to the next segment.
Yeah, let's get to it. We do this all the time, don't we?
Hey, it's here somewhere.
It's here somewhere.
The second, the third.
We cannot let people down, and because I think some people maybe tune in for the weekly puzzle.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Joe is shaking head. What?
What are your thoughts on that, Joe? Is that the case?
No. But, you know, it's like the grocery store. You go in for whatever, something.
And then you find everything you need today? No, but I bought a whole bunch of extra stuff.
That's right. But so we moved it around today. All right. Well, you know, we'll be back right after a message from some of our supporters. If you're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio. Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And I am Eric.
And we are recovering from segment two. But our guest today is Sarah Geiling.
Sarah,
hello. Yeah, thank you. And you are the manager at the 10,000 Villages store.
Yes.
And we really want to talk more about you and how you came to be, you know, the manager of that store and why you're doing this as, you know, like a career option.
Mm-hmm.
But we each week have a weekly puzzle. And so we want to cover that first, and then we'll get to your story in just a minute. So last week's puzzle, I thought was really fascinating. It fell under the category of a dad joke, but question last week was, why did the bicycle mechanic stop going to work one day?
Why is that?
Because he was too tired.
Oh, well, let's see if we can have one that may or may not be related.
Let's see if we can get one that's a little bit better than that.
So our weekly puzzle for this week is, what did the lifelong mechanic end up doing in his mid-60s?
What did the lifelong
mechanic end up doing in his mid-60s? Mm-hmm. Think about that one.
There's a lot of possibilities there. That's right. Well, if you think you know the answer, send your responses to radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com, and we will read the correct answer on the show next week. Even though with this question, there could be like several correct answers, this will be our correct answer.
Well, the penny one had a couple answers there.
I still think
red,
that was
brown. Red, brown.
I still think the penny was brown.
I brought some receipts.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, we're talking with Sarah Geiling today, and Sarah's wondering, what did I get myself into?
These crazy people.
But you are the manager over 10,000 Villages, and it's all about fair trade.
Yes.
So how did you get here? Right? Is this the kind of thing that was kind of growing on you, like throughout life, and then one day the opportunity came up, or just tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, it kind of came through a series of events. Growing up, I think my parents did a great job of just introducing us to different cultures, and so I always had a fascination with the world and other places and other people. So I really started with that baseline. I didn't ever have a plan to work in the nonprofit sector. I went to college for photography, graduated with a degree in photography. While I was in school, the college I went to, Eastern Mennonite University, had a work-study program. And some of those were off-campus, and one of them was at 10,000 Villages. And so I was familiar with the store here in Mechanicsburg, and don't have many memories of shopping there or anything, but I knew about it.
Right.
And I was excited to do something off campus. So that was my work study for 2 years. I went in for a few hours a week and really got to know the product and the stories. And that's kind of where my love of 10,000 Villages began. So when I moved back home after college, I stopped by the Mechanicsburg store and asked if I could volunteer, and they conveniently had a job opening. part-time opening, but it was something, and I was like, okay, sure, why right. not?
But there are volunteers.
There right? are, yeah. So mm-hmm. 10,000 Villages, most stores have very small staff. So mm-hmm. we have two full-time employees and one part-time employee, and then everyone else that you see in there is a volunteer. So mm-hmm. we have wow. a volunteer base of about 20.
I didn't know that.
20 volunteers, and these are some of the most dedicated people. Most of them have been there for 20-plus years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible. Wow. And we have new ones, too, that are just starting their journey as a volunteer. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's another amazing part of the story, people just wanting to get
and
back.
That seems
to
like a
trade.
Theme, doesn't it, James? Like with the bicycle shop, now here at 10,000 Villages, the people who seem to volunteer are the ones who are the most bought in.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like they feel very convicted. And,
right,
and
right,
dedicating
exactly.
their time and in some cases their money as well.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of our volunteers are, they'll admit it, they're our best customers.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. You know, and in our podcast last week, we were talking with the folks from National Christian Foundation.
Yep, John.
And that's right, John Eisenberg. And if you didn't have an opportunity to listen to that, go back to the Holy Family Radio website and click on listen to our podcast. And
episode 40.
That's right. Or on Spotify as well. Yep. Money and Mission is on Spotify. So, but we talked about that when people plan to give, like mm-hmm. a volunteer is clearly giving their time, that there's a lot of joy mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. comes because of
they're not doing it for nothing and
giving.
They're not getting paid.
Right,
so.
Right.
That's
exactly.
right. And there is a lot of joy in being able to share the resource, even if it doesn't feel like it's a big resource, it's our time,
mm-hmm.
right?
Absolutely.
And when that effort goes into a story like 10,000 Villages, mm-hmm. it really helps to make an impact
right.
All exactly. around the globe. So you were going to volunteer.
I was. All I wanted to do mm-hmm. was just, yeah, pass, give just, a few of my hours there just, because I loved it so much.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, they had a job opening, and here I am 10 years later, full time now.
10 years.
10 years later,
wow.
yep.
yeah. That's right. Yeah, no, good. Congratulations. And really just, I mean, this is where God has you. Mm-hmm. And conceivably, I mean, you could be here for 10 more years.
Right. Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Or a very long
yeah.
time like that.
Right.
So are there things that you do then like outside of the store? Like what are some of the do you try to build awareness? I mean, clearly you're here on the podcast. This is helping mm-hmm. to build awareness. Are there other things that you get involved with and then that you know kind of do the awareness
and help educate consumers?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I mean, we're always looking for more opportunities to do that. The easiest way and the longest way that we've done that is we do have small off-site sales throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
Some are close, some are far. We've done Jubilee Day, the Amani Fest in Carlisle.
Mm-hmm.
So those are opportunities where we might not sell a lot of product, but it's a great way just to get our name out there. And
right.
and people might walk by our booth and say, oh, that name sounds familiar. Like I've driven by there my
mm-hmm.
whole life.
That's right.
But yeah, so those are the ways that we try to get into our community mm-hmm. is kind of festivals and offsite sales.
And right. Joe, I know we've done here with Holy Family Radio, the Women's Expo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that over 50 Expo. I think the Women Expo might be a good fit.
Okay, interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, where 10,000 Villages would actually like set up a booth.
Oh, yeah, and try to get some exposure.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's a whole bunch of ladies coming out. They come in groups. And again, they're coming because they want to.
Right,
and
right.
And so
that's
when
awesome.
They see things like that. That might be moving for them.
Yeah.
That's an awesome thought.
Yeah.
So you're doing stuff like that. And as a store manager over there, it's like, again, it's managing the store, but it's, again, building some of that awareness. Are there
right.
other things that you, like initiatives and so on, that you get involved with in that line of duty, I guess?
Not at the moment. I think most of the focus is in the store, at least at this point. Just, yeah, trying to get people in and get mm-hmm. people interested and share the story of fair trade. Because once you know the story, most people kind of get hooked.
Yeah.
So,
that's right. Yeah,
so the first
right.
part is just getting them in the store.
That's but, right. I mean, aside from the fact that the products are amazing.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
you said you stopped in the Mechanicsburg store. Are there other locations around?
There are. There are about 20 across the United States at
okay.
the moment.
Any other in Pennsylvania? Or?
There is one in Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay.
Yes, so
we're
that's
lucky
the
enough
next
to have
one.
Two.
Yeah, and there's one down in Hagerstown.
Oh, wow.
Maryland, I believe those would be the next two closest. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yeah, it has grown over the past 70 years. There's been times when there's been more stores than 20. It always fluctuates a little bit, but we do have representation across the whole country.
Right, yeah. Are there pockets? I mean, like, what makes a good place for a store?
That's a great question, and I think we're kind of the anomaly in that usually a tourist area, right? Oh, so wow. Normally a lot of our stores are in tourist towns where there's a lot of foot traffic, where there's people out shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know anything about Mechanicsburg, we are not that. And so we kind of are a little unique in that we have an amazing community that has rallied around us. We've been there for, I think it'll be 33 years this wow. September. And so an amazing community of people who are invested in fair trade and have kept us going for 33 years.
Yeah, I think the demographic of this area as well likes the boutiques and antique shops, small town.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So when they hear something like that where they can also be doing good
right,
as
exactly.
well.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
you are because it's, I mean, you're right off of Route 15.
Mm-hmm.
And you're correct. It's not
no.
exactly.
There's no reason to stop unless you're going to Brothers Next Door.
That's right, yeah.
You kind of want to, you have to be coming.
Right, I mean, across the highway is a field.
Mm-hmm. Right,
and, yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, there's, that's exactly right. So, it's that. Now, do you have, and I'm just kind of curious, family-wise, you said your parents had introduced you to other cultures and so on. Have you been overseas or?
I have, yes. Mm-hmm. I did a missions program after high school. I went to Albania for about 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
I've done little mission trips to Mexico and spent some time in the Middle East for mm-hmm. when I studied abroad in college. So
yeah. We're at the Middle East.
Jordan, Israel, the West Bank,
okay.
Turkey,
so there's a lineup.
Greece. Yes, okay, we kind of traveled a little bit. But yeah, so I've been lucky to kind of be in some of the cultures that our product comes from as well, because that gives it a lot of depth also.
Yeah. Have you ever met like some of the people?
I did. Right before COVID, I had the opportunity to go to Peru and mm-hmm. meet with some of our artisans. And that was, a very incredible experience.
Awesome trip.
Yes,
yeah.
To kind of see where they're making the product, where they're living.
And how maybe that opportunity for them is making an impact in their families' lives.
Exactly. Yeah, this particular group worked with women whose children had disabilities. So just seeing how their lives were changed.
That's right.
Was
and
incredible.
Do you remember what kinds of things they were making?
They were making jewelry.
Jewelry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's right there in the store.
Yeah.
So, well, we are we're about down to the last minute of this segment. And and just, anything else as we're kind of taking out, just talking about you and how you got here. Anything that you might share with our listeners that might encourage someone who's listening to kind of think maybe they want to be a volunteer or something. Anything about your story that you'd like to share in just a few seconds with them?
I think, like I said before, when you really get to know the stories behind the products, it gives the products so much more meaning. Mm-hmm. And that's just not products in our store, but that's products that you see when you're in other stores as well. Like, mm-hmm. oh, I know I can buy this and it'll be helping people.
That's right.
So, I would just encourage, if people want to stop by the store, I'm always happy to share the stories
and
kind of hear the background behind.
Yeah.
No, that's a great conversation.
That's great.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and finish with Sarah.
All right.
You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we are talking today with Sarah Geiling, manager, over at 10,000 Villages. And it's really about fair trade but we were just talking during the break here about how the products that are there in a store are, and just some really unique things that happen. And
I guess about the fair trade aspect and like that, but Joe brought up a really good point.
Yeah. So Joe, I guess you shop there.
That's right. My wife and I do. And I relayed the story during the break that we were there, I guess, 20 years ago when we were at the restaurant next door and we said, hey, there's a store. Let's go in. And I didn't know what fair trade was, but we went in and there were a lot of neat, unique things in there. So we're like, this is great. So we bought a bunch of stuff. And ever since then, we've been going back. And my two sons, one that lives in Philly and one that lives in Baltimore, they expect every Christmas now to get unique things from 10,000 Village.
That they can't find anywhere else.
Yeah, and now they expect it. So we spend a lot of money there on them. But they have unique things like the spices and the soup mixes and all those kinds of things. You can't get them at a store anywhere else. And those things are really, really neat, coffees and those kinds of things. Right. You know, and during the break, I was saying, you need to mention the fact that there's unique things at the store besides regular things you buy at a store any other time.
So it's not just an alternative, you know, sustainable alternative, but you actually are finding awesome cultural things there, spices, foods, garments that you just cannot find in the stores around here.
Yeah, and that's
not
the
a
thing
Walmart,
that makes it
not
neat.
Giant.
Yeah, that makes it really neat. And so, like, my family now, they look forward to getting those gifts from 10,000 Villages. And we started this tradition like, I don't know, 10 years ago. It was 10 years ago when my
probably
first
even
son
some neat
married.
Gifts for their grandkids, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in Christmas ornaments, those kinds of things, too,
yeah,
are all handmade that
Christmas.
Is unique, is different than mass produced ones from coming from China. And so we like to get those for the grandkids.
And you
also
know where the money's going. So.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And for our family, it's a lot of that money. So my wife goes crazy. And sometimes I you know, this last time, I couldn't go. I was not available because she likes to go when she can, because you know she's going to spend a lot of time there and money. She filled up the car with stuff. She's like, it took us a couple of trips to get the stuff into the house. So yes, we are fans of 10,000 Villages. So I'm pretty excited. I'm glad that I'm getting to record this show instead of the other Joe.
Instead of the other Joe. Yeah. That's right. Well, we appreciate you, Joe. We really do. We appreciate both of the Joes, right?
Yeah.
You know, to our listeners, if you're out and about and you see Joe, either one of them, make sure you say thank you for all that they do, all you do over here at the station. So, but yeah, some great, I mean, truly unique products and just beautiful, just a beautiful experience that people have when they come there.
Right.
So, you know, are there any other, just, I mean, share maybe some stories if you have, you know, just again, heartwarming stories about fair trade that, you know, you've seen impacts specifically. You were talking about the families in Peru. Any other stories similar?
Yeah, I can share one of my favorite stories. I use this a lot when I go and talk, and if I talk to groups, comes from Guatemala. There is a group, an artisan group there called Upavim. And in, in 1989, the founder Barb was working with some Guatemalan women there as part of a baby weighing program. They were monitoring kind of the malnourishment that was happening in this town called, I believe it was called La Esperanza. And they noticed through all of this that really the only way that these families would be able to support themselves as if the mothers were making the money, because the moms were the ones that were turning around and really investing it in their families. And so they started a program where they started making handicrafts. And so what, that's 25 years now, maybe more than that. In that time, this town, La Esperanza, has just blossomed. So they have been able to build...
It's not just for the families, but the
exactly.
community.
Yeah, they've been able to build schools, daycares, hospitals, labs, libraries. And so this town that was once literally cardboard now had, they didn't even have like a sewage system or water. Mm-hmm. They now have concrete buildings. And yeah, it's just amazing what when people have the money to empower their families, what change can come out of that. Yeah. And like you said, not just their families, but entire communities,
if
they're not working for the artisan groups. And that's not an uncommon story. That's a story that happens in a lot of our artisan groups as well, mm-hmm. where it kind of bleeds out into the people around them.
Yeah. And it's not really then it's not a handout.
No, right? Absolutely so, not. Yeah.
So,
right.
You know, the artisans, folks that are producing, you know, these very cool products, they have meaningful work.
Right,
right.
Exactly.
And so they're engaged. They have their own planning that they're doing. And so they have opportunities to grow businesses and so on and so forth. So at so many levels, this is just, you know, a boots on the ground example mm-hmm. of what we talk about when we talk about money in mission, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. I mean, that's an awesome story.
I'm curious about, I wanted to ask, was my question here is, does 10,000 Villages work with the artisans to develop new product designs and adapt to changing consumer preferences, or do you kind of just get what they send you? How does that work?
Yeah, I think it's a little different for each artisan group. At the beginning, 10,000 Villages was definitely working directly with the artisans to do that. The kind of cool thing is that the average buying relationship time for 10,000 Villages with our artisan groups is 20 years.
Oh.
So at this point, we're really invested in these communities, and their artisan groups have grown. Some of them aren't artisan groups anymore. They're co-ops of artisan groups. Mm. Like, they, in their own communities, are growing. So I think it's a little bit of both, because now I think some of these groups are able to do that research themselves and have the people in charge that are able to develop product also. So that's a cool outcome that has come out of that.
Yeah. And I mean, again, just they are growing their own business endeavors.
Right.
Yeah.
They are empowered. Yeah, a lot of people.
And you're essentially like an Amazon to facilitate all those artisans around the world and sell through you guys, correct?
Yeah, that's one way to think of us. Yeah.
You don't do next day shipping, though.
No.
Right?
None of that.
None of that, yeah.
But I think another cool thing is there are other fair trade vendors out there as well, and now mm-hmm. these artisan groups aren't just working with 10,000 Villages. They're mm-hmm. able to mm-hmm. sell their product other places
multiple
as well.
Distributors.
And
right.
so they've just, grown so right. much from yeah. one little relationship.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, it's so important to note that as well, as many again, when there's a good plan in place, a good business plan in place, and people are following good, solid principles, doing mm-hmm. planning, checking back in, so many of the things we've talked about on the podcast so far, and we'll continue to talk about, then, often nobody can promise the future, but often things grow mm-hmm. as a result
right.
of just following those good principles. And then, again, the impact that we've had is we've helped other people. We've satisfied some of our own needs,
mm-hmm.
Joe's family's need for specialty and stuff like that. But then again, everybody else, the folks on the production end have opportunities mm-hmm. to grow as
yeah.
well, personally and business-wise. Well, you mentioned, Sarah, that you talk to groups.
Yes.
So what kinds of groups?
Very occasionally I do. Rotary clubs, different women's groups. In the area I have spoken at. We are happy to do outreach if anybody has a group that they'd like to hear more about fair trade. Like I said, we don't do it often, but I'd love to do it more if there's
mm-hmm.
anyone
That's
out there.
One way groups can get involved. How about right. another way? What would be some biggest challenges that 10,000 Villages faces in its mission to promote fair trade and empower artisans, and how can folks here in the Harrisburg area help?
Yeah, we are still a retail store. We're still dealing with the things that major retailers deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So we're competing against Amazon. We're competing against ordering directly online. So that's probably our biggest issue. Mm-hmm. We're not apart
Maybe like
from
an
that.
Etsy.
Yeah. We still have to deal with those, even though we have the fair trade aspect. So the greatest way that people can help us is to come and shop.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that simple. is come and support us, and the more, the better we do, the more we can purchase from our artisans.
Are you always looking for new artisans to come on board, so folks know somebody who has a great product, or
That does have to go through our main office, but I know they're always open to new artisan groups. That's something we hear a lot, like, oh, I worked with this group in Africa, and they make this beautiful product. Right. We'd love to be able to to have everything. But yeah.
But there are limits.
There are, yeah. But we are always bringing in new product and new different categories. So there's something for everyone. We like to say that.
Yeah. Do you get out? Have you gotten out to speak in like churches at all, or is it mostly like civic groups and that kind of thing?
Recently, it's just been civic groups. There's no reason I wouldn't go to a church though. Mm-hmm. But. Yeah, those opportunities haven't come up recently.
That just helped to make. So if you're listening.
I see a lot of those folks being moved to action. Yeah.
That's right. So if you're listening to the podcast and you'd like to have Sarah come out and speak to your church, how would somebody go about reaching you?
Yeah, you can call our store directly or email the store. I don't know if I should give those
absolutely.
Those numbers. But yeah, it's just mechanicsburg@10000villages.com. Or call the store at 717-796-1474 and ask to talk to Sarah, and I'd be happy to discuss any future possibilities.
Yeah. Yeah, great. Well, do you have, where are you at in your notes there, Eric?
We got about a minute left.
We got about a minute.
Maybe some final thoughts here.
Yeah.
I think it's a great place to go shop. It's a great alternative, unique items. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if it's, you're still going to Walmart, go in there and check it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we hear people all the time. They'll come in for their first time, and they'll be like, "Oh, I'm definitely coming back here to get some
like
unique
Joe.
Stuff." Yeah,
like
yeah.
Joe
and now. Then we see them over and over again. I mean, it's the gift that gives twice. That's another way we like to say it.
That's a good point.
So
I like that.
Yeah.
That's right. And Joe, I mean, your first time, you were not even a tourist, right?
No, I wasn't.
Yeah,
I had a full belly from coming out of the restaurant.
So. That's right.
We're like, let's look in there.
Let's check that out. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Sarah, thank you so much, for the time here, and we've enjoyed visiting with you. And
yeah, it was a great conversation.
Hope to have you back again, later in the year as well. So, again, you're listening to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.